Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Capital Club Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Adams. Every week, we bring on some of the brightest leaders around the world to discuss issues facing high net worth individuals and family offices today.
Well, Shelley, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. And what I love about your hosting of this show is that you have such a broad spectrum of topics and guests.
Yeah, we try to be pretty wide ranging. And for you and the audience, bear with me. I'm working through a bit of a cold. So hopefully Shelley will do most of the talking here and I'll spare you my voice. But I first kind of got, or you came my radar for this really great article you wrote about Don't Be a Roy for succession planning tips from Succession. And I thought it was really clever and very germane considering so many families are going through a generational transition right now. So if you could maybe with that context of that article, provide a little bit of background on yourself and what the evolution was to you penning that article.
Great. Okay. Well, to tell you a little bit about my background, I really assist clients and families with their master plan of personal, financial, family, and business goals and objectives. And I specialize in the family governance and legacy planning part. And I would say that I have a diverse background where I have banking, brokerage, financial planning, trust company, leadership, and family office experience. And along with that comes a number of professional designations. And one of them, of course, was exit planning. I have other ones to do with family enterprise, et cetera. But what I would say is that from having that diverse background, it really helps me be kind of a generalist, but also be able to add in sleeves of specialization in the sense of just the different conversations that families are looking to have, but also having them weave together their different wealth and legacy plans. I consider myself to be a little bit of a Jill of various trades just because I have technical and human or soft skills. So that was kind of where it started. And then when I got to doing the succession planning article, it was really because a lot of the families I'm dealing with either have family businesses, they're thinking about transitioning, but sometimes they're getting a little bit stalled, or I would say even procrastinating sometimes in the sense that, you know, they just don't know where to get started and how to really move forward on, you know, that particular area.
Yeah, I love the melding of the technical and the qualitative components. I think that is the essence of working in the family office space, frankly, especially when it comes to next gen. So I'm a huge fan of the show Succession. I'm sure like a lot of our listeners, I've devoured it, especially the last season in particular. So with that viewpoint, it's pretty astounding. The article that you wrote calls out that obviously Succession is fiction, but 61% of family businesses don't have a written succession plan in place. And so obviously this comes from real life, which always makes the best fiction when it's rooted in reality. So maybe share your personal experience working with families and this concept that many of them, their succession plan is immortality, which so far has not really worked out for many people.
Yeah, true. And it'll really depend on the stage that they're in. And to your point, life stage is a big piece, but also just in the sense of the immortality. They don't like to think about death. And if that's been a business, for example, that they've founded and they've carried it through, they don't want to stop that because that's just been something that's been a part of them for such a long time. And when they get to the point of actually having to think about succession, they're having to think about that mortality, but also, you know, who is really up for the task of being able to step into their shoes. But, you know, sometimes they need to take a step back just to really assess, you know, what does the business need to move forward? You know, do you see it being a legacy business? You know, what really are your plans moving forward? And taking the time to build that framework around, well, what could this look like before you even get to keeper cell decision-making? It's having that time to really do the discovery phase where you're kind of educating yourself on succession. What does that really look like? And I would also say that a lot of people don't like the term succession. So I find a lot more people using the term transition because it just doesn't have that negative connotation of, you know, someone succeeding you. And I would say there's really three key pieces, you know, starting early, you know, making sure that you're looking at this 3 to 5 years in advance, even longer in some scenarios. Make sure you have a team of advisors around you to assist with that planning and the process, and then give it the time, the energy, and the resources that's really required, you know, to help you move through the various steps from a succession or transition or continuity perspective.
Yeah, so let's tackle those kind of one at a time. I think starting early, it's never too early to start these type of conversations. And that really, I think, lends itself to communication. And you highlight something in the article that I think is key, we advocate for on the show quite a bit, which is bringing in a third-party professional to help you see around the corners that you might not be able to and help you have a different perspective from things. So how have you seen that dialogue happen internally with families? Are folks open to it? Are they even aware that these professional advisors exist in the world? How do you typically find the best engagement on that front with families?
Well, I would say that families are perhaps a little bit more educated in that area because I find over time there's so many more professional organizations out there. There's various webinars and different conferences out there that families or business owners can attend to. You kind of look to tackle kind of this big area, but also they're around advisors that specialize in the area, but also around other families that are going through the same thing. And I find that's the number one question that I often get is, you know, what are other families doing? And so to be able to help them kind of think about the best practices, think about setting up frameworks and timelines in terms of what could this really look like for them and helping them work through that, you know, again, the discovery phase where they're having to educate themselves on this area and what's really required. Getting to the point of actually preparing and thinking about execution and implementation and having that team of advisors there to help you move it along. And I would say that there's the stakeholders that have to be thought about as well in terms of the internal stakeholders, whether it's your employees, your key leadership team, any other, maybe you have a board or a board of advisors that need to be brought into the fold, but also it could be your accountant, your lawyer. What needs to be thought about as part of this process moving forward? And really getting back to that third piece, you know, the time, the energy, and the resources, like that is a big one as well. Because if you're looking at a, let's call it a 3 to 5 year time frame, even just to work through, you know, the three main phases, you're gradually getting to that point of the decision tree of, you know, am I keeping it? Am I selling it? What does transition look like if I want this to continue? And if not, then what are the different options that are available to me?
Well, and this really harkens back to something that we often see that the most successful families who do this well often have a very robust safe harbor peer network of other families that they can lean on and reach out to understand best practices or what potholes not to step in. So various organizations that exist that facilitate those type of community connections, I think, is key. Have you seen the same on your end?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of different networking opportunities out there for families to be able to join a network, whether it's a peer advisory group, whether it's just joining various organizations that have periodical different webinars on the subject, or whether they actually have, for example, where NextGen can come in and get educated on what the process might look like from their perspective as well, because you can never forget that, you know, founders are going through their own kind of emotional piece with any type of succession or transition process. But then the next gen as well, you know, they have to make sure that, do they have the skill sets, the mindsets? You know, what role are they actually good at? And what do they have in terms of strengths that they can bring to that enterprise? But it's not necessarily CEO or perhaps even one of the executive team pieces. So then you're always getting to the point of, well, if I'm thinking of keep or sell, what does that really mean? And should I be thinking about non-family as opposed to family, if I'm thinking about key leadership roles as opposed to not? And, you know, this really gets back to as well, there's really a differentiation between ownership, but also management. And, you know, ownership is one thing that, you know, you can deal with through your wills, your trusts, you know, various documents in that regard. But, you know, the management part, if you want that business to continue, you have to make sure you have the right people in the right roles.
Right. And there's a big difference between being the founder entrepreneur and then being the CEO, right? And not everyone's fit for both of those roles. Very oftentimes, they are not suited to wear both of those hats. And this process of bringing in independent non-family board members, you called it out, but I think it's really key in this, because it's uncomfortable for a lot of people to abdicate that type of oversight or control. But if you want to professionalize and institutionalize your family business or family office, I found it to be hugely important.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I would recommend, depending on the size of the business, at least getting some kind of advisory group surrounding you so that, you know, they can provide that sage, objective, impartial advice that goes along with any type of transition process.
So most of the time, these families have very astute trusts and estate advisory folks working with them on the tax and the legal side. So that's usually not a technical issue, but where have you seen the actual breakdown when it comes to succession plans not being effective?
Yeah, to your point, most professionals, whether they're accounting or legal, you know, they're definitely, you know, covering off all the technical elements that go along with things. So the IQ part that go along with any type of transition or estate plan. But really, it's that EQ side, making sure, are you having the conversations that you should be having with key stakeholders, whether it's your family, whether it's your leadership team, whether it's your employees, you know, about what you're kind of thinking about, and having everyone being able to weigh in and be a part of that process of, you know, understanding, well, this is what I'm thinking about. You know, I don't know yet whether, you know, the plan is to keep it in the family or to sell it, but I need to go through a bit of a process here and break it down into bite-sized chunks so that, you know, we can really determine what this is going to look like for everyone moving forward.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I want to pivot to this kind of the next gen perspective. One of the points you make is to really facilitate your children to follow their passions. Could you expand on that comment?
Yeah, for sure. I find that, you know, too often, or I wouldn't say too often, okay, sometimes kids are in the business just because they're a family member. And it's not necessarily what they want to do. It's not necessarily what they have the skill sets or the mindsets to do. And, you know, very often there's children that perhaps look to have a arts degree or a history degree or something like that, that might have nothing to do with the business. And that's what they're passionate about, not necessarily the family business. So it's letting them kind of find their way, because when you think of family, like, you have the same roots, but you have different branches and you have different room to grow in the sense of what is it individually you were put on this earth to do that you can be passionate about and enjoy what you're doing every day.
And to kind of add on there, I've talked to a lot of people about this. It seems like the uniform through line is creating an environment where these children have the ability to have form an identity outside of their last name and or the money associated with their family. If they don't hit that part, I think everything else gets really, really hard for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why it's always doing the work from an individual perspective, collectively as a family, you really understanding, you know, what everybody is thinking about and what road do they want to be taking as they move forward. So yeah, I couldn't agree more in the sense of there's individual, there's collective, and then there's also enterprise-wide pieces to be thinking about. An example of that would be when you're thinking enterprise-wide, because I know we're kind of talking about family business and whatnot, but if you ever have a liquidity event, then it's actually more of a enterprise that may include real estate. It could include investments. It could include a foundation. It could include the chief learning officer, as an example. And so sometimes different kids will have different interests in terms of how they can actually contribute to the overall enterprise because they have different skill sets and mindsets. And that's a great way to go in the sense of just having that individual identity. And then that can be helpful when you're thinking about succession of a number of different roles, not just a business.
So let's kind of marry all of these concepts together. And you have a point in the article where you put it much more gentle than I'm about to, but killing them on paper is the exercise that we call it in our family. And really combining the technical components of the flow through of assets on the trust and estate succession plan, as well as really having people think through and live through what that experience will be like for them, for things that might not be necessarily papered, but will have to be done in practice, right? Who will be the leader? Who will organize the family beach trip, the annual retreats, XYZ, things that might not be within the scope of the documents, but certainly will be in that kind of everyday experience for the family.
Yes. And that's really where family meetings come into play. And so part of what I help families think about is, you know, A, having a type of code of conduct in how you're going to communicate and interact with each other. You think about what are all the different family meeting topics that we want to be thinking about, whether it's cohesion, whether it's development, whether it's enterprise-wide, or whether it's the fun that you're going to have together. And to your point, you know, often it's a lot of the logistical things that need to be thought about there. You know, who's going to be, you know, chairing this meeting? What are the different logistics when you're thinking about location? Who's putting together the agenda? What are the different agenda items? Are they for information only? Are they for education? Are they for discussion? Are they for decisions? So helping them really build their knowledge and educating them on, you know, here's some best practices, but let's figure out what works best for your family. Is it going to be twice a year meetings? Is it going to be every quarter? What about that next gen or rising generation educational component you just referred to about the, it's great to have all these technical documents, but what do they actually mean? How does that actually affect me? What do I need to know? How do we feel about confidentiality? You know, so there's so many aspects and benefits that can come about from having these regular family meetings to be able to have these good sage discussions. And to your point, sometimes having a facilitator come in to assist with that is a good way to go to get you started and keep you motivated to move forward. And then sometimes some of the easier topics, those are ones that the family can just do together. But it's figuring out what everyone wants to learn about and then being able to break it down into bite-sized chunks for them on their terms and how often they want to be looking to meet.
So if somebody listened to this, we just covered a lot of ground. If you were just to give them kind of the one big takeaway from the article and this conversation, what would that be?
Well, I would say from the article is just get started. If you haven't been thinking about this, it's actually looking to get the help that you need. If you're kind of getting stalled or procrastinating in the process is, yeah, just get started. And if I'm thinking about it from a family meeting perspective, you know, again, this is all very integrated, I would say, overall, is because succession can also be a topic that gets brought up at family meetings, because it's not just a business information piece. Like, it is something that actually transfers over to the family side as well, especially if there's family members in the business or even if they're not. It's just letting them know what's going on.
Exceptional family offices, family enterprises, wealth management, and financial services organizations require superior leadership to successfully thrive in today's competitive environment. This is why I'd like to introduce you to our new sponsor, Mac International. Mac International is recognized as the premier boutique firm that specializes in providing retained executive search and strategic human capital consulting solutions to single and multi-client family offices, family enterprises, and the full spectrum of wealth management advisory, investment management, and financial services firms that serve ultra-high net private investors and family offices on a national and international basis. If you're interested in learning more about Mac International, visit their website at macinternational.com. So, Shelley, now we're going to go into more dangerous territory of family meetings, which I've been a part of many of them myself, both kind of formal quarterly board meetings as well as retreats. They are uniformly difficult to execute upon, but I think really important. And more as we enter into a digital age, in-person analog meetings, I think, are very powerful. So if you could maybe walk us through what your experience has been with this and what best practices are to actually do these successfully.
Sure. Well, I tell you, as you pointed out, you know, definitely in-person is much better because you can monitor the room. You can kind of determine if there's any body language that needs to be attended to so that you can really facilitate the conversation in a more meaningful way, as opposed to, you know, I know that online is good, but maybe for some smaller topics, not the deeper ones where you might need more conversation, more discussions, maybe breaks, and to move through that. I would say for me, it's always coming up with something simple in terms of frameworks and processes for families. And I would say I use the five P's. You know, what's the purpose? What kind of planning do we need to do? What about preparation? What's the process going to look like? And as well, letting them know that perseverance is also important as well. And that, you know, this isn't a one and done, you know, it's an ongoing process. And I would add a sixth in there in terms of patience, just be patient. You know, often people, they might be starting from a certain place and they want to get to a certain destination, but not realizing that there might be a number of steps and meetings that have to occur to actually get to that destination. So I always add in the patience as well.
Yeah, my wife will often say that I have to pack my patience before we have family meetings or family dinner, and it's a good kind of reminder. I may have glossed over this, but I want to revisit. It seems intuitive, but why are these things important? Like, why do they matter, these family meetings?
Well, I would say that especially when there's wealth and there needs to be conversations to go along with the wealth, you know, that's really where, you know, family meetings can be a really good way to go about having these conversations. And whether they're more informal or more formalized, depending on the needs, the size, the generation, or the complexity of your enterprise, you know, that's really what you're kind of starting with. And then kind of determining, again, where are you starting from? Where are you trying to get to? What are the key messages you want to share with your family? So making sure that you do that preparation even in advance of even the first meeting to really dig in a little bit deeper in terms of your intentions. You know, what's the purpose of the wealth in your family? What are your hopes, dreams for the wealth in your family? So you're getting them to do a little bit of, I'll call it internal thinking before they actually impart their key messages. And sometimes I'll help them with scripting what that might look like once I've had a conversation with them, just so that they can make sure that, you know, there's nothing in there that's going to, you know, cause any emotional outbursts or what have you, because, you know, it might be very neutral in terms of how they deliver the message that they're trying to give.
So a bit of a pre-read can be helpful. Where have you seen, just getting into the more logistical side of it, on-site, off-site, third-party service providers, what are kind of best practices there when you get a little bit more granular on how to execute on these?
I would say you're looking at neutral territory, if at all possible. Like, often I'll have families that will, you know, rent out hotel space or what have you, just so there could be neutral ground for them to meet. You know, there's all the various logistical things to think about in terms of, well, who needs to be there? You know, what are all the logistical things that need to be thought about? What about the agenda? Have we sent out the agenda in advance? Is it a neutral territory? Is there any kind of AV that we might need? Are we going to have facilitated conversations? Are we trying to do some of it ourselves? You know, so really being thoughtful about, you know, what it's actually going to look like, but also making sure that they're asking for feedback from the family as well in terms of, this is what we're thinking about. You know, we put together this draft agenda. You know, are we missing anything? Is there anything else that maybe requires attention at this one, with a view that knowing that there's going to be ongoing meetings into the future, it's just more a matter of, I always find it's purpose, process, and the timing for, you know, what are you trying to do in this amount of time? Because if it's a 2-hour meeting, that's very different than an all-day meeting. So it's picking your topics carefully.
You reference neutral site a number of times. Why is that important?
It's important because, you know, often if you think about the family cottage or the family home, you know, sometimes people will internalize or have different memories, good or bad, in that particular area. So sometimes it's good just to get everyone out of that home or cottage, just so that, you know, again, it's that neutral ground so that everyone can feel comfortable. And if you're including spouses as an example, that could be an important thing as well, just so that, you know, everyone feels that they're on the same playing field. It's not mom and dad's house. It's not mom and dad's boardroom.
Yeah. As a married in, I think that is really helpful to think through, because the venue has connotations or it can have certain energies or trigger memories. And I also think it's important to incorporate some fun into these things. I mean, it doesn't have to be like this dreary corporate exercise. You're allowed to enjoy yourself, and maybe you can kind of sandwich in some experiences or activities that everyone can participate in, I think can be really helpful.
Yeah, for sure. I find that, you know, whether they're having a family dinner or whether they're, you know, all getting together to do some activity. I have one family that's looking to do one where a couple of the family members are artists. So, you know, they're having the meeting in New York. So, you know, visiting an art gallery or something like that will be important. Just so, you know, again, everyone kind of buys into the whole process of, you know, why are we meeting and what can we look forward to over and above the topics that we're going to be talking about, but making sure that we're spending time to actually work on our relationships as well, because the more time in these other settings can be a good way to go too.
I found that oftentimes the train can really run pretty quickly once this meeting gets set and the agendas get formulated and you put together this docket of things to review. Maybe could you help walk through how to have the right mindset or approach or think through what ultimately you're trying to accomplish by these meetings, in terms of if somebody listening to this is thinking, okay, I need to put together a family meeting, before you get to the agenda, like what's the right framework here? Or how do you go about forming it, rather?
Sure. Well, I know if I'm the one that's facilitating the meeting, I'm definitely doing a lot of groundwork in advance because I don't know the family as well as they would know each other. So I'm always having interviews in advance or doing questionnaires or, you know, some type of groundwork in terms of just really understanding the family tree and, you know, who's in the business or who's in the enterprise. And so you're really doing a lot of logistical understanding even in advance of actually having the family meeting and getting everyone to buy into, you know, understanding that, you know, everything that they say to me is confidential, so that I'm bringing back the broad themes for the family meeting in the sense of, you know, here's what I heard, you know, here's what I'd recommend in the sense of, you know, because you're just starting out, you know, maybe we should be starting with, you know, goal setting. You know, what's everyone's goal for a meeting today? You know, let's talk about a code of conduct so that we make sure that everyone is interacting and communicating well together. You know, let's take a look at family meeting topic areas, you know, over and above what mom and dad might be saying in terms of their key messages. And then it might be where, you know, there's, you mentioned fun, you know, so fun is definitely important. Some aspect of cohesion. So often doing a values exercise or communication styles or something like that can be a really good way to, you know, get them to interact together, you know, something on the development side and then something enterprise-wide too. So again, depending on the timing that you have, you know, trying to have all those various aspects in the meeting, but definitely making sure that the engagement and the inclusiveness is there for the family.
And I mean, you've referenced yourself a number of times. What is the advantage, power, bringing in a third-party consultant to help with these family meetings?
Well, I would say that there's the experience factor there as well, in terms of there's a difference between presenting material and actually facilitating a conversation. So, you know, making sure that understanding whatever it is that you're trying to achieve, you know, that you're leaving lots of time for discussion and experiential learning and you know, there's an art. It's not a science. It's kind of an art in the sense of being able to actually manage the room from a facilitation standpoint. So yeah, I would say that definitely facilitators can be a great way to go just because they have that impartiality as well and the experience in running these meetings.
I think it's money well spent in my experience. It can be an expense item, but having somebody knows what they're doing and also just bringing in a third-party resource, I found that oftentimes family members can project onto that person things that they wouldn't otherwise be able to say or do directly with somebody in the family. And so they can really act as a powerful proxy for a lot of uncomfortable, maybe difficult conversations that can take place here. Have you experienced similar things along those lines?
Absolutely. Depending on the type of conversation they're looking to have, you know, who do they need to help them facilitate that piece? So to your point, sometimes there'll be really difficult conversations that need to come up. So maybe you need someone with a counseling or coaching or a therapy kind of background to be able to assist with that particular conversation. So it's finding the right resources for the right conversations, depending on what it is that you're trying to achieve.
You've got a great tear sheet on these meetings that you provided beforehand. You don't have to be exhaustive, but could you walk through just kind of the pillars and the cornerstones of what you found to be kind of helpful in executing on a successful family meeting?
Sure. Yeah. If I take a look at, I'll bring up the article right now. So there's a variety of pillars that I would say that every different consultant uses, different pillars that work for what it is that they bring to the table. And I use a family enterprise framework where it utilizes, of course, the financial capital, which can be businesses. It can include, you know, investments, real estate, heirloom assets, those various types of things. And that can be the source to actually help with the other side, which is the non-financial capital. So being your human capital, intellectual, social, and spiritual. So I break those down for families just in the sense of saying, you know, here's four other buckets. You know, let's really determine, you know, what it is that you want to be learning about or what we need to be concentrating on, you know, as we go along on this journey, you know, realizing that, you know, the financial capital is the financial capital, but let's make sure that we're concentrating on this equally so that you're bridging between financial and non-financial. And so I really find that, you know, for example, human capital, it's all about relationships, values, morals, communication, conflict resolution, you know, those types of areas that I always find is probably one of the most important to be working on, just so that people really learn to communicate well, listen well, you know, so that they have all those skills to be able to carry through on these family meetings. Because I would say 9 times out of 10, when I do questionnaires or interviews, and I ask the question on what do you wish your family was better at? Communication. It always is at the top. So I spend a lot of time on human capital, absolutely, over and above, you know, intellectual capital is things like education. It can be governance. It can be coaching and mentoring, rights, responsibilities, understanding roles. The social capital piece, of course, can be your philanthropic pillar, where it can be community involvement or leadership, and of course, the charitable piece that they might be doing from a philanthropic perspective. And then the spiritual capital can be whether it's religious, faith-based, or any other types of beliefs. I add in their cultural considerations as well, because sometimes different ethnicities will have different ways of managing things, and that has to be brought into the fold. So I definitely look to work within that framework just to be able to help them really dig into, you know, what would be of interest to learn more about in each of those various areas.
And then you've got a great kind of nugget in here about family councils and how they can interact within these broader family meetings and really the broader family office infrastructure organization itself. Could you, for folks who aren't familiar, explain what a family council is and what role it plays? You know, obviously, every family is different, but typically within a general family office structure?
Yeah, absolutely. Depending on the size of the family and generation as well, I find, like, for example, sometimes you're dealing with families that might only have 4 to 6 family members. Well, you don't necessarily need a family council for that few people, because you might have leaders in various areas and, you know, little committees that you would build in to help manage through conversations and agenda items. But when it gets to a family council, often you have various branches. And sometimes it's determining, A, who's interested, how do we determine what that representation is going to look like? And is it by branch? Is it by interest? Is it by job description? Like, this is what the job description is. And, you know, maybe we need people to be able to actually apply for these particular roles. So again, every family is going to be a little bit different in the sense of how formalized they make that process. But I mean, there's so many benefits, especially once you do get to generational families, like generation three, generation four, where you definitely have some very important roles that are driving the family forward in terms of making sure that they're being attentive to all the different conversations and topics that they need to be covering. And what I would say as well, too, is sometimes I've met with families where they have a lot of infrastructure in place and they have been having these quarterly meetings and annual family retreats, but sometimes they haven't necessarily paid attention to the changes generationally. And what I mean by that is there was one particular family where there was 50 family members in the room and we did a values exercise. And what I found out afterwards was their mission statement was actually 36 years old. So it didn't take into account the new generation. And all of a sudden there was sort of new themes that were coming forward, like things like sustainability and environment and things like that, that actually had already been kind of brought to the fold from an investment perspective for the enterprise. So it was really kind of neat letting them have that conversation to kind of see, well, hey, you know what? This is our house, but you know, sometimes you need renovations. Sometimes you need to update these things and be able to allow that next generation or rising generation to be heard and be aligned with what it is that they're trying to do.
Yeah, I think for multi-generational families, it can be hugely powerful to have representatives. And a really good exercise, you know, we were working with a family recently that they kind of tasked G5 with coming up with two representatives to serve on the family council. And they said, well, how do we go about choosing the representatives? And they said, good luck, like figure it out. And it kind of forced a lot of engagement or conversations that otherwise would never have happened. And some people really want to step up, other people don't. It can be a very useful exercise without really a ton of negative fallout, right? There's not a mandate there that would be critical to the enterprise necessarily, but a really good learning tool, kind of like how families use philanthropy as well. So it's helpful and well said.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I find that if you put the ball in their court and let them help each other, but also it's maybe a little negotiation. It's maybe, you know, they have to present why they should be considered. You know, so it's really good learning or education for all family members for any of those types of exercises. So yeah, great way to go.
Yeah. Well, Shelley, this has been terrific. For our listeners, please do leave us a review and a rating. Let us know your favorite part of the conversation. How should people engage with you if they're interested in learning more about what you're doing and the work and the content you're creating?
I would say the best way is probably through LinkedIn, because that's a great tool that I even find for just being able to keep up to date with what's going on, even in the industry in general. And, you know, there's a lot of practitioners in this area and what have you, but I would say LinkedIn would be the best. And I would also say as well that what I love is how some people post infographics, which I find is a really neat tool just to be able to get, you know, a lot of information into a really tight spot.
Yeah, I agree. I think LinkedIn is terrific. That's how we connected. So would encourage people to reach out and follow. Shelley provides great information. A question we ask people that come on the show, do you have a daily practice that helps bring peace to your life?
I do. I actually have three.
Okay.
Some form of exercise, whether it's a sport or a walk or whatever that might be. So moving my body, making sure I take tech breaks. And then the third thing would be spending time with our elder dog that brings so much love and joy into our household.
What's the name of the dog?
Lilo.
Lilo.
She's a little black pug about this big.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you again for sharing. Best of luck and enjoy Lilo. Talk soon.
Thank you so much.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.